Don't listen to this podcast.
And welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Pizza. Wait, no. That's not right. To Crazy Panels and Stories.
Man.
That's not right either. Crazy Comics and Stories, that's it.
I think that's what this is called.
It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the table is not Joe Ryder.
No, it's not Joe Ryder.
Because Joe is, I don't know where he is. Duluth. The backwoods of Mississippi, someplace where they filmed Deliverance, I don't know. Instead, we've got, from Panels and Pizza...
It's Adam Vermillion.
In a crossover.
Oh.
It's a crossover.
A collector's item crossover classic.
Darn right.
The purlance of our hobby.
Well, it's not just a crossover. It's we're going to do an episode of Joe and I's podcast.
Yes.
Then an episode of yours. So it's like when Marvel used to have, like, the story would start in Daredevil.
Yeah.
And end over in Ghost Rider.
Yes.
Which was weird because, you know, there's different writers, and Ghost Rider and Daredevil were not similar characters. And, yeah, the 70s were weird.
But those three issues all had John Bernard.
Yes.
Well, yeah. And Karen Page and her father, I think.
And the Stuntmaster?
The Stuntmaster, yeah.
There's a character you don't hear about anymore.
No, he did pop up in the Wade Somni run.
Yes.
Out in San Francisco.
Yeah. That was back when they couldn't decide what to do with Ghost Rider.
No, they had no idea. He was like, had he joined the challenge or the champions yet?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was still, you know, is he really a demon, or is he pretending he's a demon? He also did the thing where he turned into Ghost Rider at night for a while.
Okay. Wow.
But nothing tops the issue 16.
What was issue 16?
Issue 16 came out in 1975. You know how I know what year it came out? He jumped a shark with his motorcycle.
Just like Fonzie?
Just like Fonzie.
Wow.
It was all like, right. Oh, Jaws is hot.
I wasn't even alive yet.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, I appreciate that.
It was a year off. I was almost here.
Yeah.
Almost here.
Thanks. Thanks for making me feel old.
I don't get the opportunity to do that very often on my other show, or on my show. It's usually, like last night we did a new comic book day at Dayblock, I co-hosted with Elliot Ray Hall, and the guest was 23.
Oh!
So, yes. So, and just having turned 41, I like, okay, where are the cultural touchstones? Well, thankfully, comics, manga, video games. So, there are things to talk about.
Yes.
But other stuff, I'm sure, references I had made way over the head.
These kids today with their loud hair and their big pants and they're listening to the Skrillex. Is Skrillex still a thing?
I don't know. Is he?
I don't know.
He was like around for a while, and
I heard him on Howard Stern a while back.
Maybe he's still around. I don't know what they're listening to now.
These kids today.
I've been listening to The Clash all day, so I what do I know about Skrillex or whoever?
The music with the wub wubs and the laser noises and the.
and the CNC Music Factory. I don't know. No, it was Clash all day today, so that's, not much modern music.
So you did a live comedy comic book show.
Yeah.
And tell the people about what that darn thing is.
All right, it's a new comic book day at Dayblock Brewing in Minneapolis at the intersection of 11th and Washington. And it's every Wednesday. It's co-hosted, co-founded by Elliot Ray Hall, who is a local stand-up comic and a professional comic book writer. He writes You know, he's written for Dark Horse. He's written for Heavy Metal. He is writing for Valiant. Has some stuff coming up for Vault that... I don't know how much more I can say other than that. He has some stuff coming up for Vault.
Okay.
So, he's just a hell of a guy. They've been doing this show since December. It was co-founded with Grace Thomas. She is another stand-up comic. She also worked at The Source. She just moved to Chicago back in July. Local writer and editor of comics, Katie Rex, took over co-hosting duties. Katie's out of town for like a week and a half, so I just bugged Elliot. I was like, hey, man, can I at least do the 16th for my birthday? And if you need somebody for the 9th, I'll do that too. And it's now become a 3-show stint.
Oh, good.
So we will also be doing, probably by the time this airs, it will have passed, there's a new comic book day at Minnesota Fan Fest.
Oh, okay.
On August 19th from 6 to 8. So we'll be doing that. And then off to Iowa with me after Fan Fest weekend.
You're escaping Minnesota, which, you know, probably a good thing because you've done like, what, 140-some episodes where you're interviewing local comic talent.
Yeah.
You probably run out of people, so now you have to go to Iowa.
I haven't. I wish that was the case. And boy, howdy, would that be a mistake? You'd be like, I'm going to continue my legacy in Iowa, where I'll just try to get Phil Hester on every week.
Well, he's a nice guy.
He is a nice guy, but he probably doesn't want to hang out with me weekly. So he's a busy man. So family stuff's coming up after 143 episodes here and near the cities. It'll be going with me. This is what we're doing, the crossover. I recorded the show last night at Dayblock. A bunch of panels and interviews at FanFest.
Yeah, I saw that you're pretty much going to be recording the entire FanFest.
Pretty much, yes.
That's how I burned out on convention shit.
Yeah, it's maybe really good timing to be going off to Iowa for 4 months. I'll have all of this content in my pocket. And the only thing I'll have to do is just edit and release on a weekly basis and then worry about stuff around December.
That's what I do. I worry about next week.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I get to hang out with my kid because that's what you do. You just hang out. You don't parent.
Oh, yes. I know.
You don't parent at all.
As a single father, I know all about the hanging out with the kid.
Yes.
I've told the story on the podcast. The first Batman movie saved my son's life.
Really?
Because there were times when it's like, could you please just stop. Just stop. Here. And I would put in the first Batman movie, which he loved, so I would get 2 hours of peace so that I did not kill him.
Yes. He could say that now. CPS can't be called.
My son's 28 years old now.
He's in
the
clear.
Statute of limitations has passed.
My daughter is unfortunately 3, so I can't.
You can't be
voice
that
such
honest.
Sentiments. No, I love her very much, and she never annoys me. Never.
And you know she'll listen to this when she's like 25.
Yes. If we're all still here.
Oh, we'll be.
Well, that's kind of gone away, hasn't it?
Yeah.
The nuclear threat. That was so last week.
I don't. I actually wrote up on BaseStab today a thing about. Yeah, I need to just stop paying attention to the Daily Crisis because it's like living in a reality show where we need something to keep you tuned in
in
the commercials.
You know, it was really nice. I was in Iowa over the weekend dealing with personal stuff. So the things happening in Charlottesville were just kind of on the periphery of my life. I mean, I knew things were going on and it was heinous. But I didn't have the time to be online all day and focus on it and get like really angry. So, which has pretty much been my whole summer.
Yeah.
It's kind of been, there have been good and bad things about life, and one of the good things is not being so tuned into the shit show that's been going on since November. So.
Yeah, I've not even tuned into a lot of comic news.
Yeah,
but I looked at the sales figures. that came out. They just came out on ICD2.com.
Good or bad? Is this July?
Yes, figures? July. Okay. They're down 24% from last year at this time.
But I thought the industry was doing well.
They're down 24% from this time last year. And I wanted to actually bring that up.
Yeah.
Because you've gone to a lot of conventions.
Yeah.
And, you know, the conventions around here, we're now getting back to the point where it was in the 90s, where there's, you know, a little weekend warrior show every weekend. And you went to ChapelCon down in Albert Lea.
That was a great time.
And there were, well, I don't know about the weekend warrior shows, you know, that are just one days. But the ChapelCon looked like it was packed. FanFest looks like it's going to be packed. The MCBA Con's packed.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, Boston had a comic convention.
They did, yeah, their big 50, show.
50,000 attendees.
That's fantastic.
Add 10,000 more people, and that's more than bought Amazing Spider-Man in July. I'm stealing his gimmick, by the way. This is gimmick infringement.
We're
at a pizza place.
Yes, Red's Savoy all the way, well, not for Corey, but for me, all the way down in Edina.
You want me to leave right here?
Sure.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. But that's your gimmick. You interview people over pizza.
Yes.
And we'll talk about it on your show.
All right. This is, food's here.
We'll keep talking, though.
We've done it.
We did it at Paddy Wagon.
Yeah.
A few episodes back.
I missed all these summer shows because of my real life.
Having a life.
I do. And, going to Iowa is going to be one way to stop having one. So.
Yeah, just think of it this way. All the TV you'll catch up on.
You know?
And the corn you'll get to see grown.
Oh, yes.
The smell of the pigs at the big factory farms.
No. Actually, where I'll be staying is a little town called Swisher. It's right between Iowa City.
Oh, they're really sweet.
And
Cedar
Rapids.
Thank you. You've been a beautiful crowd.
And my the family I'm staying with, they live on the Iowa River Reservoir.
Hmm.
So, very nice view.
Okay.
It's just, we're out in the woods, kind of, on an old dirt road. And it's very peaceful.
And you've mapped where all the comic shops are in the area.
Oh, yes. Okay. The nearest one is Geek City in North Liberty, about 10 miles down the road, who happened to also share an entryway with the North Liberty Dairy Queen, and it's one of the Dairy Queens that still makes Nerds Blizzards. So all the...
So you're set.
All the weight I have lost this summer, the 27 pounds I have taken off since the end of May, is in danger of coming back. If I'm not vigilant.
Well, it just means you got to spend more time on the elliptical machine.
That's true. The Nerds Blizzards are worth a little extra time. But, that's down there. Daydreams in Iowa City. They're a long-running shop. A good shop. And Alter Ego up in Marion, which, you know, basically northwest or northeast Cedar Rapids. So I'm not far from comics. Just going to be very far from most of the creators and my community and people I've become friends with over the last 3 years, which will be the most difficult thing.
That happens, though.
It does. But it's for my kid and for her future, so I can't complain.
I keep hearing that the children are our future.
Yeah. They supposedly.
No.
Teach them well and let them lead the way.
Well, that's why I gave my son, when he was about 7 or 8, here you go. Here's the first of the Spider-Man essentials.
Mm.
And just, you know, here you go. Just read these essentials as they come out.
To
this day, he has a deep abiding love for the character Mysterio because of how Ditko drew him.
Oh, yes.
And whenever a Spider-Man movie is announced, he goes, will Mysterio be in it?
Not yet, kid. No. I too have about a 50-plus essential and showcase collection that is just sitting there for the day Gracie's old enough to want to, like, dive in.
Now, Gracie She enjoys comic shops.
Mm-hmm.
Do you read her comics? Do you read her any of the kids' comics?
I've tried, and the attention span just isn't there yet for the comics. So, like, a little golden book, we're good, but the comics, a couple pages, she's ready to go do something else.
Okay.
So I'll keep working on her, though.
Well, you know, all the Disney books are out. You could also, Fantagraphics is reprinting all the Don Rosa and Carl Barks Duck stuff.
Mm.
So that's good stuff for kids. And they even, they just started a new Archie that goes back to the classic style. That I believe is drawn by Dan Parent and written by Ty Templeton.
Okay, I didn't know that was...
Yep, it's called Your Pal Archie or My Pal Archie or something like that.
I don't know, I got her for 4 months, so... No, I have this grand scheme of, I just started therapy. And the other day, my therapist was like, do you ever take any time for yourself to just relax?
What's
nothing?
That?
And I didn't have an answer for her, except for, well, I guess that's coming up. But after she's in bed, I plan on reading and playing video games and working out. An opportunity came up I can't really discuss yet, so the... Lots of video games and reading have been kind of sidelined for a really cool project.
Okay.
So the working out will still be there because I've got to take care of myself now that I'm single parent.
Yeah. One of the things they don't tell you about being a single parent is, you actually are past a lot of it, but sleep. I still have not caught up on my sleep. Still. So try and find a job where they pay you to sleep.
You've done that.
I have.
You're smart.
You don't sleep great.
Though, you know, I do work remotely, so they have no idea if I'm awake or not. As long as the email gets answered in a timely manner.
There you go.
Yeah. I may or may not have done that this morning after being out past 1 o'clock for my birthday. So
I wanted to talk a little about the conventions you went to.
Yeah.
Tell me about ChapelCon.
All right. After this mouthful of food's gone. So ChapelCon was Albert Lea, Minnesota's first ever comic book convention.
Now, for people all over, how big is Albert Lea?
A couple thousand people, maybe. It's not a huge town. Big enough, you know, they got a downtown with a square and, you know, Walmart and a couple of hotels, local restaurants, a truck stop out on the edge of town, which is where I usually stop if I'm going through Albert Lea. You know, there's no point to really go through the town itself. But a couple of the guys, they are a large enough town that they have a comic book store. And the two guys that run the shop decided they wanted to put together a convention. And they just didn't want to do, like, one of the mermaid shows.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted a convention. So they got celebrities. That they brought in, like, Lou Ferrigno and Mike and Ming from Comic Book Man and Molly Holly and, God, who else? Bud Bundy, David Faustino.
No.
So just, you know, your typical kind of comic book celebrity that... You get at these shows.
Well, and Molly Holly's from here.
Yes.
And I know that she's involved in the local wrestling school.
Correct.
So I've seen her at some of the local shows. Really nice. Always wanting to talk to fans. And I imagine that it was a lot like that. And, of course, Ming Chen, right?
Yes.
From Comic Book Men. Think about that. Here's a guy who's a clerk at a comic shop, and he's considered a celebrity now.
Yeah, just got to be on TV. That's all you need. So, or my TV deal. I don't know.
But, why didn't Kevin Smith put him in any of the movies?
He was. He was in a... It got cut, but he was in a scene in Dogma.
Oh.
Where they're at a strip club. He was in the audience, and it didn't make it in. So, but yeah, so they were there. you know, the guys who ran it, Randy and Gilbert, it was really, it was a really big chance they took.
Yeah.
By undoing something like this. And, but when I got down there and I met them in person, their enthusiasm was incredible. The town was excited. You would drive down the main drag and you would see posters for the con up in like the auto repair shop window. So it was everywhere.
Hmm.
And you know, we got there, we set up. The one thing that I went down with Dave Wheeler and Keegan Cahanes, or Cahanes, Cahanes is the joke name now, but that he lets everybody use, but it's not right. The one thing they really were excited about when we got onto the show floor is they had the booths for the creatives set up like a big show. They all had like an 8-foot table, about 6 feet of space behind them for banners and everything. Everything was like curtained off and it just looked extremely professional. And they were like, wow, we usually don't get this much space to sell our stuff. And so the organization was really well done. Being a first year show, there were some kinks that they're going to have to iron out.
Yeah.
Like the facility, the way it was set up, it was at like the local hockey rink. There were two big rooms. The first room was where most of the vendors and the cosplayers and half of the celebs were, and that was right by the front doors. And most of the traffic was getting filtered that way. And then where all the comic book creators were and where I was and some of the other celebrities was down this longer hallway that didn't look like there was anything down there. So that room, unfortunately, was a little quieter, a little slower. And that's nothing, that's not a negative against what they did.
No,
it was just, they had no idea that that could be an issue, that people may not see this hallway to go down for more things. And they worked on it the next day to try to filter the crowd down the other way as well. I heard a lot of the creators say, you know, we'd definitely come back next year. Definitely come back next year. People seem to have a lot of fun. Unfortunately, unlike an MCBA show, there wasn't a lot of focus on like comics outside of people who make them that were there, the creators that were there. There were maybe four vendors that had comic books for sale, and then a lot of vendors who I questioned why they were there, you know, what it had to do with pop culture, some of the things they were trying to sell. But, you know, I understand first year show, they're trying, they're just going to throw everything at the wall, see what sticks. It was a lot of fun. And then, you know, they had drink and draws at the local, one of the local pubs in downtown after each night. And that drew in a pretty good crowd. A lot of fun.
Well, good.
It was a lot of fun to get away with the boys for the weekend and just kind of mentally check out and drink a little too much alcohol and you know, test my gastro fortitude by having dinner one night at the Chinese buffet, lovingly called the Walk and Roll.
Oh,
yeah, which Dave said was great. But I pretty much stuck to rice and wontons because I didn't want to chance it.
See, for me, most of the Chinese buffets remind me, I have a friend who's a chef. And right now she lives in Amsterdam. But I met her when she was here. And we talked about all the, you know, found out she's a head, you know, top line chef. And she said that the people she was staying with took her to this Chinese buffet.
Oh, God.
And it horrified her. And she could not comprehend how it was. And then she told me what it was. And I remember that we used to go there when I worked at Fairview. Because it was kind of across the freeway. And I was like, oh, that's a bad choice to start with.
Oh, yeah.
And it was part of a discussion where she talked about how American food horrifies her. Biscuits that come in a can. Everything is huge. By the way, these glasses for our soda are just tiny.
They are. This is not American. They should be as big as my torso.
Darn right. I always say that a glass at a pizza place should be so big that it's for someone who just stepped off the surface of the sun and needs a drink.
I mean, you need it to counteract the sun and the pizza.
So not a lot of comics there.
Not a lot of comics, but, you know, it was a good time. And I mean, if you want comics, you know, you still can't really beat the MCBA shows as far as, like, the amount of product on the show floor for just not, you know, long box digging, but the amount of creators that they always bring in with their own books that are for sale.
Yeah. So. That's one of the things that I used to say all the time. The MCBA, the two-day show, gets more independent creators than even SPX does at this point, if you're just going by pure numbers.
And what is it, 250 they usually pull in each year?
Yeah. And that's just the indie people. Mm-hmm. You know, they bring in the big names. Joe actually dropped a... Let us know who one of the names coming to FallCon. I'm sorry. MCBA Comic Con, whatever. I don't know. I named it FallCon. It's FallCon in my head. Pat Broderick will be making a return.
Oh, really? And I'll be in Iowa and missing it. So, but you bring up the Weekend Warrior shows. I'm missing three shows in a row in September because I'm moving. Lion Con up in St. Cloud is the first weekend of September.
That's more of a gaming convention, because I was there last year.
They're really trying to bring in the comic part of it. I saw, like, The Source is going to be there, selling books. They're really trying to expand it. The weekend after that, FrankieCon 5 at Frankie's in New Hope is going on.
I thought you ran that.
No, my buddy Jer Christensen, the bartender there, is the con organizer. And then the weekend after that, on the 16th, is Comic Card at the Bloomington VFW.
So yeah, like, they do those every, what, four times a year?
No, maybe twice.
Oh.
And there hasn't been one this year, so it's been 10 months, or will have been about 10 months. Yeah, the last one was in November.
I went to the one Larry Hama was at, but I never got a chance to talk to him. He's somebody I would just want to sit down and say, tell me every story about Wally Wood. Because he started as Wally Wood's assistant. And if you follow him on Facebook, every so often he'll start dropping stories about Marvel in the 70s and 80s.
But that's right, he does.
I would love to just, please, tell me. Tell me everything about Wally Wood.
I got one of his $40 character sketches. I got a Daredevil from
him. Oh, okay.
Because he did draw an issue of Daredevil in the 80s. So I was like, all right. And, yeah, so Comic Card is going on. And so it's just three shows that I had planned on attending that suddenly just poof, gone. But you know what? I feel like I'm going to be doing enough at FanFest that it's okay to miss these like one-day smaller shows, which are a lot of fun. Especially, well, FrankieCon is always a good time. It's very, very tiny. And the last one they did, I think it was back in March, had about 350 people attend.
Oh, that's not bad.
This is a convention inside of a restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was very packed. And there were just people who came right when they opened at 10 and they hung out the entire day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know. And I'm not talking about those of us with tables that had to be there. So they're doing that up. And Comic Card's always a good time. I'm really disappointed I'm going to miss that. But, you know. There will be other shows in the future. That's all I can say.
Maybe you could start one in Iowa.
You're the second person in as many days to say something like that, because I do see the end of my time in the cities coming to a close. And I'll be in Iowa until January, then I come back pretty much just to sell the house and get it ready to be put on the market. And then after that, it's looking like Des Moines.
Oh.
Which isn't bad. Yeah. It's only 3.5 hours away, and they have a wonderful downtown, and a great food scene, and, yeah, I would not complain about Des Moines being where the fates take me.
I don't know if I'm ever going to move. Because, you know, I moved up here, and still, you know, 30 years, and my mother, well, you know, they're hiring at the JCPenney's in Canton. Mom, no. You know, I go to concerts, I go to movies, I go to this. He said, well, we've got a movie theater.
How many screens?
Two screens.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, Peoria's a 45-minute drive.
Okay.
Peoria smells funny, though.
Yeah, because we're originally from the same area of the country. Yeah, I'm from southeast Iowa. You're from, like, east central Illinois.
Lovely central Illinois, as Peoria calls it.
45 minutes is about the drive time to get to civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that was how it was for us. 45 miles south, Quincy, Illinois.
There you go, the Quad Cities.
Yeah, no, the Quad Cities were 2 hours away from where I grew up.
Oh, so, that's right. Yeah. I always get those mixed up.
Yeah, so Quincy was south. Burlington, Iowa, 45 minutes north of us. Macomb, 45 minutes
Macomb,
east of
where
us.
I went to college.
Yes, and my brother did as well. I don't think there was anything 45 miles west except Missouri farmland.
So. We don't talk about Missouri. Missouri, where they show the Beverly Hillbillies on PBS. So, here's the question I have.
Yeah, man.
We've got 50,000 people showing up at the Boston Comic Con. You have a comic convention in Albert Lea, Minnesota, of all places. You've got all these one-day wonders. Why aren't they converting these people into buying comic books? What is either the business or the shops not doing to get people to say, hey, you like this character? Well, come on in. We've got tons of this stuff. And if you go to the local comic shops here in the Twin Cities, you know, you can look at the numbers on ICB2, and they're going to be everywhere else by the time this is up. But they only tell part of the story because you go to Hot Comics. It's like, oh, look, that stack of the last 3 months is, you know, thicker than a Chicago pizza.
Yeah.
You know. So the shops are cutting their orders to try and keep up with the fact that people aren't buying as many comics.
I'm going to start with the big two. And it's a common argument, but they're impenetrable for new readers. And I'm just going to go right with DC's newest event, the Metal. I read Dark Knight's Metal issue 1 yesterday for review for New Comic Book Day. I normally wouldn't pick this up on my own. I'm not much of a DC guy. I'm definitely not much of an event guy. I read this thing, and I'm like, okay, they're dropping. Have you read it?
Not yet.
Do you want me to?
Oh, we can spoil it, okay. Because Neil Gaiman spoiled it.
He spoiled it. Well, this is beyond the last page reveal of Daniel popping up. Yeah, it's, you know, they're bringing in, like, the Challengers of the Unknown, Challengers Mountain, and Red Tornado. There's one panel that looked like it was referencing the spaceship or whatever that crashed that gave Vandal Savage his immortality. You know, Plastic Man and an egg. You know, without, like, what is it? Is the term in media res when you get that big group shot and then they'll have the name of the character or something? You know, Claremont was great at it.
In media res is beginning the story in motion.
There was none of that. So, you know, you get to, like, that classic flip page one, and there you have your big two-page spread on pages 2 and 3. You know, it's just a tried-and-true comic book script construction.
Jack Kirby created that.
Did he? So, that's why he's the king.
Damn right.
So here we have our group shot of the Justice League. You and I have been in comics forever. We know each of these characters. We don't need anything. What if somebody has never, and it's kind of hard to use this logic sometimes in this day and age because of all the media and the cartoons and the video games. You know, kids have an understanding of who these characters are now without ever needing to have touched a comic book. But let's do Marvel. What if? I've never read the Justice League before in my life. I've never seen Batman. And all of a sudden you have these seven characters standing here in the middle of this arena fighting monsters that Mongol has sent after them without any type of introduction to who any of them are, their powers, their personalities. Why would you want to spend $5 on a comic book if you're going to sit down and read it? Oh, thanks. We're going to be here a while, so we're just burger. You can spend $5 on something else that's going to give you more entertainment, perhaps.
And this entire crossover. I did the math. You want to read this story? $80 retail.
I don't have $80 just to read a story.
I bought Alan Moore's Jerusalem novel, which I bought the 3-volume slipcase deluxe edition. It was $35. I'm going to get a hell of a lot more story out of that than I am $80 on Batman starting a new line of What If books.
Yeah. So that's what I think the big problem is that you get people who are excited about these characters and these stories because they see them on the movies and they see the cartoons and they play the video games. You go to Target and buy them on your t-shirt. You go into the comic book store, but you look there, and you've got 6 goddamn Batman titles.
Yeah.
Which one do you grab? Why is Clayface a good guy? You know, things like that. It's like, I don't know what happened. I don't know where the disconnect started, because I know just from personal experience, when I started reading comics, like really got into superhero comics, my first book was Uncanny X-Men 247. And I wasn't...
See, and by that point, I was reading it going, this is just a mess.
But I wasn't intimidated. I didn't know who all the characters were. I just was like, oh my god, I can go back and buy 246 more of these and catch up? That's amazing. I don't know where the disconnect started, where... I don't want to call it lazy reading, but just kind of wanting everything handed to you right from the beginning. And not have to really put a lot of work into the entertainment or figure out, you know, who this stuff is, what's that. Because, like, in the metal, they made a funny joke about Aquaman's harpoon arm. And they did one of the editor's notes, and it just said, see the 90s.
See, now that's okay.
That's funny, but it's just somebody, it's still kind of an in-joke.
Yeah.
Where a new reader is going to be... What does see the 90s even mean? You know? And I think that is Marvel and DC's biggest fault, is that they are churning out product for guys like you and me who have been reading comics for, you know, 30, 40 years. And we know these characters backwards and forwards. We don't need it in media res. We don't need introductions. But for a newbie...
See, I'll push back on that a little bit.
All right. Let's hear your thoughts.
Marvel has a whole bunch of books that are for new readers. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, Squirrel Girl, Unstoppable Wasp, Gwenpool. They're not selling either. So I think the distribution has to be a part of it. These comic books are in comic shops.
Mm-hmm.
And...
I didn't start reading from a comic shop. So.
Marvel doesn't have newsstand distribution, which is why IDW's got all the Disney kids licenses.
Is that why they still have them?
Well, they're new. The Star Wars based on the Star Wars cartoons, those are new. They just started. The new Marvel Digests are from Archie. Why? Archie still has distribution. Marvel doesn't. Marvel just has comic shops and bookstores. Now, bookstores are great. That's where you put your trade paperbacks.
Yeah. They don't even have the single issues in the bookstores anymore. That went away within the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I remember when my wife was working at the America's Best up in Blaine, right next door to the Barnes & Noble. That's what I would do. I'd go in and I'd kill time. Mm-hmm. And I'd just grab a bunch of comics off the newsstand, mix of Marvel and DC, just stuff I would never buy at the shop myself, yeah. but just to kill time and read. And then one day, it was just all DC. Mm-hmm. All the Marvel stuff was gone. It was like that, you know, cutting off that avenue. Hell, you're cutting off readers. Because like, there's a hell of a lot more foot traffic into Barnes & Noble than there is at the Sorcerer Hot Comics, right. unfortunately.
But I see places like The Source. It has tons of people coming in, tons of people buying comics. And yet Spider-Man doesn't sell 60,000 copies. Once you get below the top 10, you know, your top 4 or 5 are selling 100,000. Then under that, it drops fast. And while I understand why comics cost as much as they do, the fact that Marvel's putting out 90 books. People go, oh, let's see. You know, for Secret Empire, there are 7 or 8 books every week that tie into it at $4 each. Well, Netflix is 10 bucks a month.
Yeah. And you can watch 2 seasons of Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Iron Fist. And
or, you know, the Marvel Unlimited. I cannot stop praising that because, oh, it's 6 months behind. Big deal. I'm a year behind on some stuff.
I'm 54 years behind on something, so I've never read.
Yeah, every Monday, there's 30 new books. A mix of the new stuff and the old stuff that they're digitizing. They're digitizing that run of Hulk that came after Peter David, which I didn't read because they're doing Hulk as a horror comic. They don't have horror artists on this. It's not going to work.
No.
And going back and reading it, the stories are okay, and I was right. The art doesn't quite mix with what they were trying to do.
Who did they have on art for that?
They actually had John Romita Jr. on some issues. And he's really good for, you know, the big, you know, big superhero stuff. But you don't go to him for mood anymore. Now, he could do it on Daredevil, but I think that's because he was being inked by Klaus Janson. And if you're inked by Klaus Janson, it looks like Klaus Janson art.
Yeah.
Which is okay.
No, it was Al Williamson.
Oh, Al Williamson.
Was the inker during JRJR's run.
Okay.
Is that thing doing all right?
Yeah, I just want to check how much time we're at. Okay.
We're at about 45 minutes.
I didn't know since it was a crossover if time mattered or not.
Well, I don't want my episode to go more than an hour and a half because then people get a little nuts.
Isn't it funny how it's free, but yet they still expect certain things?
Well, we learned, because I've been doing this for, I don't even want to think about it.
A while.
But we would get people who would say, oh, when you go over, you know, an hour and a half, I can't listen to it in one sitting. And then we tried doing where if we recorded long, we would cut it in two. But then one of the people on the show hated that. Just hated it, so we quit doing that. And, you know, we'd bump up against 2 hours every so often because Joe leaves me off on rabbit trails. On the episode before this one, he actually got me to read from the J. Peterman catalog. So I'm easily distracted.
Sorry that I'm keeping us on task.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
I'm also very focused on this pizza I got.
Yes, this is a good, solid pizza.
Uh-huh.
I've had some bad pizza. I've had some great pizza. This is, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give it about a 7.
Yeah, the boys just, they and we're talking about it more in the next episode, whatever. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They can serve up solid pie and you're not going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Your socks aren't going to be knocked off either.
Yeah.
So remember that was a science project we had to do in chemistry. It was make sauerkraut and mine did not turn out. So.
Well, that my mom would make it because she's the German side of the family. My dad was the British side of the family. And my taste tend more toward the British side. why I drink so much damn tea. Of course, I'm not as British as I should be.
No.
I have been told that by one of the guests on Solitaire Rose Radio, Paul Arperl, who's Professor Elemental.
Oh, yes.
He and I chat once in a while, and he has said, you are not nearly as British as you need to be. So... So here's the question I have that's going to be controversial.
Is that back on?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I didn't even see you do it. All right.
I'm sneaky. I'm a professional. Do you think all these comic conventions are helping comics or not?
I don't think they're helping comic book sales at all. I think what they have helped is establish places for the geek community to come hang out for a day or a weekend and experience that camaraderie of being around like-minded people. Because these people, they're not going to a con and then run into a shop the next day to buy stuff. You know, if they're going to buy books, they're buying them there at the show from the creator at their table. They're not being like, oh, you worked on this. I'm going to wait until I got some money the next day or two and then go get a book from the shop. It's either they're going to buy it right then and there or not at all.
Yeah.
So it's... I really do believe they've just... It's become kind of like... It's a hangout. It's a social media status update, you know, with photos. Be like, hey, look what I'm doing. Look where I'm at. Here's who I saw. Here's what I'm buying.
Here's the celebrity I saw.
Yeah, here's this awesome cosplay that I just got my picture taken with. You know, it is... They're events.
Yeah.
Much like we're talking about the comic book events in the books, which aren't great, the conventions are great. Because you just... As I said, you go out and you hang out with people who are of like minds.
Mm-hmm.
And they've really, over the last decade or so, have become like more family-oriented.
Yes.
So you
That's
see...
one thing that I've really seen, because when we started our convention, it was guys, and maybe their girlfriend would tag along and be standing there with their arms folded, kind of staring up at the... at the... The weird architecture that they had at the beloved Thunderbird, which no longer exists. It's gone. It's been torn down.
Yes.
It has broken my heart.
Like, everything good and fun in the cities, it gets torn down and replaced by something we don't need.
Yeah, I'm a huge Twin Peaks fan. Walking into the Thunderbird was like walking into the Great Northern on Twin Peaks, except tackier. And much more racist.
I've heard stories. I never got to see it.
Wooden papooses on the wall. The light fixtures were totems with bows and arrows around them. We would bring guests there just so they would look around and go, what the hell is this?
Yeah, so, I don't know, is that a controversial answer?
No.
I just think it's an honest answer.
I think, for me, I'm always trying to push people. I think if you're a comic creator, you're there to get your name out and to sell your sketches, it's there for a job. Most comic shops there, they just show up, we're dumping old product.
Yeah, it's like, here's like... All the Secret Wars crap we still have at 50% off the cover price or whatnot.
And it's nice to get that money and to get rid of the dead inventory. But you need to be selling your shop. It's like a trade show. When I go to industry trade shows, they have stuff for sale there. But what they're trying to do is, hey, you need to get this certification. You need to work with this. You need to do this. Or you go to a job fair. And the job fair, they're trying to bring you in and sell you on their company. Hey, you want to work for us? You want to sell these widgets?
So
at the comic shows, the retailers are just there to sell their stuff. They're not selling their store.
Mm-mm. That's a good idea. Something that they should focus on doing. Why should you shop at Hot Comics over the Source? Why should you shop at the Source instead of Comic Book College?
Or even just coming in to our comic shop. I think the MCBA, they say they get about between 5,000 and 7,000 people.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I really doubt that those people have subscription boxes. There are people who do, but a lot of them are just there. Mm-hmm. Why aren't you getting them hooked?
Well, it's not our job, it's the publisher's job.
No, it's your job because you need them to come in every Wednesday and spend their $20 to $40. That's what you should be doing here. You should be pushing your subscription service, pushing your Shore, pushing stuff to get them hooked. And what's wrong with contacting the publishers and saying, hey, we got this show coming up. Can you send us a big old batch of those 25 cent, dollar, whatevers? We'll stamp them and do something like that. I believe the Marvel Rebirth, what are they calling their rebirth?
Legacy, yes.
Legacy is actually running, they're running some ads for the comics on cable TV channels. And I've always said, why aren't they advertising?
It works. Because TV commercials were how I got into comic books. So I was a kid in the 80s, 1984. Marvel had that deal worked out with Sunbow Entertainment to make the Transformers and G.I. Joe cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And during the day when Transformers and G.I. Joe would be on, you'd get some commercials using animation from the shows, selling the Marvel comic books.
Yep.
And that was just like, oh my God, there are comic books too? I need those. And that's what started it for me. It's like, you know, I started buying licensed titles, really liked comics, and then, you know, discovered superheroes through just like being around the other comics, picking it off the spinner rack, and it just like grew from there. You need this cross-media promotion. It just can't be like, you buy your copy of X-Men, you're flipping through, and well, here's an advertisement for Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah.
You're already selling to your audience.
Right.
You need to be reaching a new audience through different means. So if they're going to bring back, like, TV advertising, that's great.
I think you need TV advertising. Another thing, we're starting to see comic book creators showing up on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They're showing up as guests. I forget who it was. It was somebody who, was it Chris Iliopoulos, I think, was on Seth Meyers. Robert Kirkman is on everything.
On AMC all the time, yeah.
He was on At Midnight every once in a while. Did he mention the new comics that Skybound is putting out?
No. See, that's...
You got to do the hard sell.
Yeah.
And for everybody who says, oh, that's not what these shows are about. Yes, it is. That's the reason someone shows up on a TV talk show is because they're contractually obligated to do so many appearances to promote whatever project it is.
Yes.
Now, they may have fun while doing it. Last night on Colbert, there's Ellie Klemper, and she's doing a bit with him about, you know, puppies. They're telling lies about these puppies to get them adopted. But she's not on there for her health or to hang out. She's on there because part of her contract with Netflix is you will go on and you will talk about the new season of Kimmy Schmidt. That's how the world works. When I have a guest on, I always tell them, shill like you're Bob Hope on The Tonight Show in the 70s and you got a special coming up.
I have a Patreon if you want to give me money. Link in the show notes.
Darn right. And what do you get? If you're, because a lot of people have these Patreons.
I don't even remember, Corey. It's been so long since I've written up anything, and I think that it's up to $7 a month. So I don't even see the money because it doesn't get released until you get up to 10. So I don't know where that money's going, that $7. a month, but
it's just kind of sitting there waiting.
Yeah.
Maybe, like my YouTube money. It's just sitting there waiting.
Just sitting there waiting to be claimed by somebody. I don't know who. The Chinese,
once
maybe.
Once it builds
the
up
Russians.
To a certain amount.
Yeah, maybe then it will release. Yeah. I don't know, but I don't even remember what the hell the rewards and levels were. I wrote them up over a year ago, and they'll hit it heavy at the beginning. It's like, hey, I've got this, give me money. And nobody really did.
Yeah.
And it just kind of became like, well, this is pointless. Let's focus on the stuff that really matters. And that's getting the show out every week.
Yeah.
You know?
My big thing is, I don't want to have a Patreon. Because I want to give everything to the listeners. I don't want to have, oh, this is behind a paywall, and this is, you know, this is special, and this is... So that's why I do the ads, because I try to pick ads, and it's not, you know, you listen to podcasts, they all have the same ads, because
yes.
we're all doing the same thing.
Yes.
It's when the listener goes and buys something, we get to wet our beak a little. That's all I want. I'm going to wet our beak a little. But the ones I use, I'm not using stamps.com.
Don't worry.
Because I don't use stamps.com.
And
the ones I have on the show are the ones I use.
And I'm sorry, folks out there, I don't have $1,000 to spend on a new mattress. So.
Oh. Well, even on satellite radio, I listen to this show that has... I forget the name of the liberal guy, but it's also got Michael Steele. And for 3 hours, they talk rationally. There's no yelling.
What?
There's no this. And Michael Steele and this other guy, they're running the same ads that I run.
See,
Howard Stern has the same ads that I run.
I don't have ads.
Yeah.
So.
But we do.
You do.
And they're wonderful people, and here they are.
That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Subject, advertising. Thanks.
See, it's professional.
Yes.
I've done radio, so
way.
I know what I'm doing. We've got like 5 different shows now on the Solitaire
That's
Rose
great.
Radio network. We've got this one. Every Monday, by the way. Every Monday. And if you go to the Facebook and like our fan page, you get to find out that we do sneak previews on Sunday nights, which is basically before I sit down to watch The Simpsons. I put it up there on the Facebooks. We got that. We got the Solitaire Rose Radio, which is solo. Sometimes it's interviews. Sometimes it's stories. Sometimes it's just me blathering on and on and on. Sometimes it's, who knows, it's whatever pops into my head. And Peter Rios is the, you can blame him, because he's the one who kept badgering me to do a solo podcast where I could experiment. like this isn't enough of an experiment.
Yeah. Nobody wants one of those from me, so.
Well, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. It's fun to play with the format.
It is. And I've got a lot of that coming up for these next, like, dozen to 15 episodes.
Like the new Comic Book Day thing.
Yeah.
You've recorded that, haven't you?
Yeah, we recorded that
last
night.
Out.
It'll go up. This will go up. The panels from FanFest are going up. The interviews I'm doing at FanFest are going up. It's just going to be a mix of stuff.
Yeah. So, and, you know, you have to kind of expand.
Yeah, yeah.
Myself and Wolfie B. Bad, and Dan Moore, who's the host, and artist on Worldwide News, which we'll be talking about on the other show. But we do a podcast called Bad Advice, where people send in their questions, and we give bad advice, because I have a Bachelor of Science in Psychology.
So he knows how to give advice badly,
but we give bad advice. We tell you right there, it's bad advice. But there's a podcast we have that I'm not even on. I know it's scary. There's podcasts that I'm not on. And that's Scrabbling Across the West. And that's with Dave and Stephanie Kofel. Dave is a folk musician. And they wander around the country to gigs. And every night they get into their camper and they play a game of Scrabble and they record their conversations. Very cool.
That's a nice concept.
And the Solitaire Rosen Radio Network is, what's a good way to put this? We are in talks for at least two other podcasts that may debut by the end of the year. May. Basically, I'm twisting arms. And now that we've done all the plugs.
Yes.
We asked Joe. Joe, what's going on the eBays? Joe?
Joe? I have not seen the vast accumulation of crap that he's going through right now. So.
It's frightening. It's an entire basement.
That's what I have picked up. So
it's an entire basement.
No.
Me, I'm just stacking all my omnibuses in the living room. Joe's not here, so instead...
No, what are we doing?
Why don't we talk a little about the stuff you have coming up? Who are some of your guests that are coming up?
So this weekend I will be interviewing Kaylin Smith, who is the writer and artist and creator of a book from Devil's Due called Plume, which is kind of a fantasy western.
Hmm.
I read the first two volumes yesterday, and it was a lot of fun. I'm excited to talk to her. Hope Nicholson, who is an author and editor. She wrote a book, I believe it's The Secret Life of Superhero Women. I don't think that's the real title, but she's got a book that starts the 1930s up till today, talking about the various women in comic books, the characters, who created them, and gives a little background. So maybe does a dozen characters for each decade. And moves through. I got a bone to pick with her for not including Modesty Blaze, but we can forgive it, I guess.
Well, Modesty Blaze, that was a comic strip.
Well, maybe it was only books. I flipped through it. I got to do some reading tonight in that. So she's on. Megan Sloan, who is the editor on Bill Willingham's new book, Lark's Killer, from... God, who is the publisher?
I don't remember.
First Comics, something like that? Yes.
First Comics is part of Devil's Due.
Yes, yeah, an imprint of that. So she's coming on to talk about that new book. Longtime artist for Marvel and DC, Jim Calafiore. So I'm excited to talk to somebody who's been working in the industry for quite a long time. Sean E. Williams, writer from out of Austin, Minnesota, who has worked with Bill Willingham on Fables and Ferrest and has his own slew of titles and books.
Too bad you're not talking to Bill Willingham. Tell him I want more Coventry.
All right, Bill.
He did one issue. One.
So he...
How dare he?
He is not coming on. Local creator Ryan Dow, who does a really funny daily or couple times a week strip called Captain Sadness. About a superhero with depression. It's just a one panel gag and every one of them makes me laugh. And then Doug Kahlberg, a local artist, is coming back on. He hasn't been on the show since episode 20-something, I believe.
Oh, wow.
So
you're having people on more than once?
Yes, there have been people who have been on more than once. Cough Dave Wheeler 10 times. lovingly refer to Dave as Plan D. So it's like, if there's a cancellation or something...
You should call him Alec Baldwin.
Yes. But he's that. And I'm also sitting in on three panels. The Marvel Netflix panel, the Star Wars The Last Jedi panel, and the Thor Ragnarok panel. So I'm a panelist on those. And then I'm moderating the two World Monster Headquarters panels on Sunday. So I'll be pretty much doing a panels and pizza type thing without any pizza.
And you can't order a pizza and have it delivered?
Probably could, but it's already going to be me wrangling like multiple creators at one time in front of a hopefully large audience.
Okay.
So, and then, as I mentioned earlier, New Comic Book Day from 6 to 8 on Saturday night, which is actually free to the public. They don't have to buy passes to the actual convention. They can come and check out that show where Hope Nicholson and Sean Williams are going to be our guests on that with a couple of the stand-ups. I believe one of them is Drew Gianda, and he's usually at New Comic Book Day every week, and he's a genius.
Okay.
He will do a character skit, and it is, the stuff he comes up with is insane. And only a mind that is a bit mad could pull off what he pulls off with these character skits he does. So it's going to be a fun weekend, and that's what's coming up. And then just months of editing, you know.
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why Novelcast is so late is because it's so editing intensive. I'm sorry, Derek. I'm so sorry. I'm trying.
Is that one of those you work on bit here, a bit there until you just get the episodes out?
Well, what it is, I will sit and read the novel about 35 minutes. And then I edit out all the times when I screwed up something. Or one of the reasons I'm reading the novels out loud is to edit them. So if it's, that doesn't work. There, that's a better way to say it. Or, you know, if I mess up the word too many times, I think I have a, where I'm saving them all. I now have like 45 minutes of me just saying, fuck. Maybe I'll release that for our April Fool's episode.
Yes, yeah, it'll be like that episode of South Park. They ran the counter.
Yes, yes. For the word shit.
Yes. Times Corey say fuck.
Oh, well, that one, it's just frightening. It would be frightening. But I've been saving them.
I like it. I like that idea of using the podcast as an editing tool.
Yes.
Because, you know, when you write, they're saying, you know, read what you've written out loud to make sure it sounds well and rolls off your tongue and sounds like natural speaking. So, it's really cool.
You know, it also helps because there are times when you have to do, like, information dumps. And when you're reading it out loud, there's a difference between when you're explaining something to someone, which is what we do here, and when you're a writer and just, I got to get this information out for the next three chapters to work.
Or you are George R.R. Martin and you spend three pages describing food and sigils from each house.
Oh, it's worse.
Oh,
not with mine, but bringing that up, it's like every time I read Tom Clancy, I could always tell what Tom Clancy had written and what other writers had written, because Tom Clancy goes into loving detail for endless pages about the military stuff that you could tell the Army went, we have this new thing, we want you to write about it. And it's almost like a playboy of a gun. Whereas the other person, yeah, it's an AK-47.
Yes.
Well, after we do your plugs, we get into my favorite part of the show. No, not where I smother my pizza with ice cream.
Ooh.
Freaking and geeking. Adam, what are you freaking on?
Oh, Jesus.
Should have been ready for this.
Yeah, my personal life.
Oh, God.
That is what I freaking... I'm going through a separation, divorce, whatever it is, after being with my wife for almost 20 years. So this whole entire summer has pretty much been one big freak out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way I've described it, and I've really only ran into three people, that's counting her, who get the reference, and that is, I basically, for most of the summer, was second season Farscape John Crichton, losing my goddamn mind. I've since moved into about season four Crichton, sometimes drifting back to season three Crichton, but the season two Crichton's kind of passed.
Well, so that's good.
I've slowly started to make peace with my situation. It's really weird. I just turned 41. I've never been single my entire adult life, so there's this whole, like, who am I that I'm going through? Who am I as a single person and as an adult? Who am I as a single father? You know, who am I just as an individual? Because I don't know if I've ever really known. Because
right.
I've always been part of a duo since I was 21.
Now, on the opposite side, yeah, I'm someone, I've been in some relationships. My marriage only lasted 2 years. The divorce actually lasted longer than the marriage.
Oh, jeez. God, I hope it doesn't last 17 years.
No, the process. But I think my longest relationship has been about a year and a half. So for me, when I'm in a relationship, I don't know what to do. And one of the things I've learned is when you ask people very direct questions, they think you're joking.
They really do.
So I will actually say, this is not a joke. How many times a week should I call you at this point in the relationship? Because I don't want to be a pest, but I also don't want to ignore you. And that's, you know, you're going to have to learn that with dating, because dating is weird, and there's all that. But
this
one
is the thing, I make a joke, and it's not really even a joke, because it's the truth. I haven't dated since dial-up.
Yeah.
And I know the world is, like, much like the gunslinger, it has gone and moved on. And like, one of my biggest concerns is, I don't want to be a creeper. That's
right.
All I hear about, talking about, you know, guys online who are creeps.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, that's not what I want to be, you know. Especially if it's unintentional. It's like, I want to know if, you know, but anyway, I tried the online dating thing. I thought I was ready.
Oh.
I got cocky like 3 weeks ago. I was starting to feel good about things. I'm like, let's dip my toe on this. Nah. So, just gonna focus on my kid, my podcast, project I've got coming up, getting healthy, and I don't know.
Well, maybe. One thing you're doing is you're getting therapy.
Yes.
And a lot of
people done about 20 years ago.
A lot of people are scared of therapy. When I was in college, I went through therapy because I had a big mental crash. I am not saying this to brag. I'm only saying this because it will help explain this. I have a very high IQ. So through school, I never had to study. As long as I pay attention in class and read the book, you know, sometimes when the teacher's talking, I'm going to get an A. I was the kind of kid who, if I got a B, my parents would ground me.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Then, you know, I'm in junior college, and just, I think I had one class where you could do extra credit, and the teacher kind of pulled me aside halfway through and said, you need to calm down. Why? Because you've amassed more credit than I am giving this class. You've done all the extra credit and this. Your final grade is already 105%.
All right, so, like, I'm not going to do any work anymore for
so
this class.
So, when I get to my junior year, you know, I'm working three jobs to put myself through college, and all of a sudden, it's not coming easy to me. I don't know how to study.
Because you've never had to study?
I never had to study. So there was one day I woke up and it's like, oh my God, my back hurts so much I can't move. And I make it to the student medical center. And I tell them, you know, my back really hurts, I need something for my back. And they go, okay, well, tomorrow come and see this person. And I go, and I'm thinking, oh, this is, you know, somebody who knows about... Nope, it was therapist. And because I'm really smart, again, not bragging, my first 2 months in therapy was me kind of dancing around, not telling her anything. Because I could. I know how this works. Until finally, about 2 months in, she said, you're wasting your time. You're not wasting my time. I get paid no matter what. Yeah. You're wasting your time. Either need to give into the process or just give up. And when I gave into the process, that's when I learned about meditation, learned about, you know, all the calming things. There are times it goes away and times it comes back. About a year ago,
God, yeah.
About a year ago, I went through a really stressful period as well. And when I went to the therapist, I don't know if your therapist did this, but they give you kind of a flash test.
Sorry, did you want me to move it out of your way?
No, I'll finish these up.
Okay.
So they give you kind of a flash test. You know, here are these questions. You put an X by the ones that you agree with.
Yeah.
And I did it. And then she said, by the way, this was an anxiety and depression. Now, for you have a 5 or over on any of them. So for depression, you've got about a 5. Now, you've told me about your situation. It sounds very situational. Then, you know, once this situation passes, you'll be fine. So I'm not worried about the depression. But on the anxiety, you had a 19.
Oh, Jesus. clock of time. Yeah.
And I've talked about it repeatedly on this show. Now I'm on medication to help with the anxiety. And it's to the point where I go, you mean people don't have panic attacks all the time?
Yeah. Mine is at least as needed.
Okay.
And I try not to take it very often, just because I don't want to have it as a crutch.
Mm.
So, but no, I was there with you at the beginning of the year. I went to the doctor, just my GP, and filled out the 1 through 5, and it was high across the board. And he was like, "Get on this, do this." I went last week for my wellness check for work. And it was mostly zeros and ones.
Oh, good.
So, feeling a lot better about everything. That's really my only freaking... Nothing... You know, my general stuff. Like, oh, I hate what they're doing in Marvel. I hate what they're doing... That all seems kind of pointless right now. Yeah. So, you know, just...
But not for me.
Not for you. So, Corey, what about you? What are you freaking on?
I look at sales figures, I know sales figures, I dig into sales figures. Yeah. Marvel and DC are selling about where they were in 97 to 2000. That's not a good place. It's good if you want to invest in Spider-Man, because in 10 years there won't be very many of these issues floating around. But if you're a publisher, you've got to be worried that the bottom's falling out. And I haven't heard anything at DC, but I'm hearing rumblings at Marvel that heads are going to roll. That if this legacy doesn't work, there are going to be people who are looking for work.
I don't blame them.
The weird thing is, a lot of the people who got fired from 97 to 2000 are the ones running DC now. So...
And they're doing well. Rebirth has been...
The sales are the same.
They're the same...
You know, Rebirth is another one where sales went up and then back down to where they were. It was a bump. It wasn't a growth.
But I don't hear people complaining about Rebirth this far into Rebirth like they were with New 52.
I'm going to explain what, if I'm a comic publisher, you complain all you want. If the sales are going up, I'm not going to listen to you.
Right.
If the sales are going down, well, you know, then we might listen, but the people who complain are a minority. It's always been like that.
That's true.
Back in the 90s, people bitched and bellyached about the X-Men all the time. What was the number one selling comic in the 90s?
X-Men.
Yeah. Spawn.
Yeah.
Spawn doesn't make any sense. It's a mess. It comes out. Spawn was selling a whole lot. Todd McFarlane was like, fuck you. Sales are the only thing they listen
to. Yeah. I mean, shit, yeah, it was. X-Men was, because I owned 31 copies of issue 1 at one point in my life. of the 8.1 million that were printed. So,
next thing is, I talked a little about novel editing.
Yes.
My first novel that I did as a novel cast, I have completed the, you know, I did it as a podcast. I went through and said, okay, here are the structural problems that need to be fixed. I fixed those. Now I'm doing the final edit so that I can make it an ebook on Amazon. And I feel like I'm hammering nails into a wall with my forehead.
Oh.
It is, it's to the point where it's like, I don't want to read this book anymore. I wrote it, I've read it 40 times, and I'm reading it again. And it's something that has to be done, because it's like, oh, this says D-O instead of T-O. I gotta fix that. You know, the little things, because I've read some self-published books by name authors, where you can tell they did not go, they just hit spell check.
That doesn't always work.
No, it doesn't grab a lot of the, it doesn't grab when you've written the wrong word.
Yeah.
So.
it's like editing the podcasts. It's like, that part of it is the worst part of the whole process, sitting down and editing the file.
Yeah.
And when I am done doing that and the episode is released, I never want to hear it again.
Right.
Never. Because all I hear is this mistake and that mistake and what I did wrong. Even 140 plus episodes in,
yeah,
it's still like, oh, what the hell, Adam? What did you do? Why did you do it like that?
And for me, it's more like, should I cut that or not cut that? I leave in my mistakes. I will take out when Joe does something that's libelous. And a previous host, I had to edit her a lot toward the end. But for me, I leave in my mistakes so that I go, oh, next week I have to explain, yep, I got this name wrong, I got this publisher wrong, I did this incorrectly, because I just go off my head.
Yeah. What I do is a lot of times I trim down me, where I feel like I have gone on way too long about something and it ends up being, there isn't any point to this.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not tuning in to hear me talk. They're tuning in to hear my guests speak. So if it starts going long, it's like, I can cut this.
Yeah.
This is so inconsequential to the show. Nobody's going to know it was there.
Yeah, so, I can see that.
And that's pretty much all my editing is anymore. That and, like, dead space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have asthma, so I cough. I'm not going to be able to cut them out as easily here, but Joe and I now record on separate audio tracks so that I could just silence. Or when Joe's playing around on the internet looking up porn, I can silence that. And the last thing I am freaking on, we don't talk politics on the show, but news has become very stressful to me. Everything, it feels like we're in constant crisis.
Yeah.
And
not the good kind that DC liked to do.
And not even the bad kind that DC did. Countdown to Infinite Crisis. I still am mad about that. But it just feels like every day. And you try to say, oh, I'm not going to watch cable news. Well, I don't watch cable news, but you don't need to watch cable news to know that there's chaos going on all the time. But even with all the chaos, nothing is getting done.
No.
Nothing good, nothing bad. Nothing is getting done. So, one of my artist friends, who Liz Berube, she talks about, she lives in an assisted living facility, and she says that the therapists are just overwhelmed by the people who live there who are stressed out all the time about what's going on in the news. And the people I work with, you can see when that morning something scary happened. Like, you know, the whole North Korea thing. They were coming in to work, and you could just see the tension in the shoulders and everything. And it's just, it's a drain on everybody. So I'm freaking about that. And we've had enough freaking.
Yeah.
It's time to do geeking. Adam, what are you geeking on?
I am geeking on Minnesota Fan Fest and being part of that. I'm really excited. It is like my first big show.
Yeah.
In 3 years. You know, like a big... I don't want to say legitimate, you know what I mean, though.
Yeah.
It's like a big show being put on by an organization that puts on big shows.
Yeah.
You know, they're the folks behind Phoenix Comic Con. 2016, they had 106K attendance over their weekend. So the excitement for what this could turn into and what it could do for...
Now, are they bringing in a lot of sports people? Because that's what they do for Phoenix.
No, no. They've got a very small handful of celebrities.
The celebrities are doing a lot of video for them, though.
Yeah, yeah. Jason David Frank, the Green Power Ranger, White Power Ranger, Tommy. Eddie McClintock, Garrett Wang, Sean Patrick Flannery, one of the Boondock Saints dudes, coming in. Those are their four big celebrities. And then...
So no Kate Micucci.
No, unfortunately.
No Christina Hendricks.
So we won't be battling over any hands.
Well, I'm not going.
Yeah. No, you're not going. You don't go. So FanFest, the project I can't talk about, I'm really geeking out over that. It's comic related. It's a insane opportunity, and if I fuck this up and squander it, it's one of those things that I won't be able to forgive myself for.
Well, we're going to be on your side.
Thank you, because it's an opportunity that just it was presented to me just out of the blue. I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't searching. It was just, hey, Adam. And one of the guys involved was like, hey, Adam, do you wanna? And I was like, oh, yeah, I wanna.
Well, I guess now we know who's taking over Daredevil.
Yes, it is me. And then speaking of Daredevil, the last thing I'm geeking on is my new Daredevil tattoo.
Oh!
My first tattoo ever.
I got two weeks ago.
And it's itchy as fuck right now as it's healing. But I will be getting the colors added very, very soon. It's a piece from Daredevil 23 by Chris Somney of him standing stoically amongst the gargoyles of the Chrysler Building. And it is pretty gigantic for a first piece of ink.
Yep.
And it's one of those things where as I was getting it done, I'm like, why didn't I do this sooner?
Yeah.
This is nice. Especially when they were doing the bigger black areas, filling in like shade and shadow and stuff. And it was just like the noise and the motion and the sensation. I was just like, oh, I could go to sleep. So those are my... Oh, and the last thing. As crazy as it sounds, I'm really excited to go to Iowa and be able to spend so much time with my kid.
Yeah, because I see that could be fun.
Because I don't know after January what the future is with how often am I going to see her, how often is Courtney going to have her. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's just really nice to know that I've got this set amount of time, and it's just going to be me and her and her auntie and uncle as well, just every day, you know. So we got her into a preschool in Iowa City.
I saw that.
So I'm really excited for her to get back into that type environment and have that structure back in her life and be around other kids her age and learning again, you know, learning better than what, at her age, what mom or I can do for her.
Okay.
So I'm really, really, really excited about that. So, and how about you, Corey? What are you geeking on?
Today... At around 1:15 in the afternoon, I finished the first draft of the fourth zombie novel in the series. It is called Shining City on a Hill.
All right.
And,
is that a reference to something? That sounds familiar.
Yes. Reagan used it to describe America as a shining city on a hill.
Okay.
And if you've listened to I think After the Fall, which is the first one, was the first novel cast I did. I treat zombies the way Romero does, in that they are social commentary. And in this one, I started with an idea about social commentary, and it was going to be my November novel, but November blew up in my face, so I couldn't finish it. I'm kind of glad I didn't, because it was going to kind of be one note social commentary And then when I came back to it in March and started working on it again, it kind of spread out in a whole bunch of different areas. And I'm not a person who writes down where the novel will go.
Okay.
It's just, okay, I want to do this, and I think it ends here. So I'm exploring the wilderness as I write. And I was very excited about where certain characters led me. And but the first draft is done, which means I put it aside for about 6 months and then start digging in and reading it and saying, okay, what needs to be fixed?
So what is the reason behind that amount of time to put it aside?
So that you're not in love with it anymore.
Gotcha. Okay.
You have to be able to kill your darlings.
Yes.
And you have to be able to look at things from a critical stance rather than, oh, but I loved writing that. I had one novel that I wrote during NaNoWriMo. I loved it the whole time I wrote it. Absolutely loved it the whole time I wrote it. Put it aside 6 months later, started reading it. It's like, this is a mess. This is just a goddamn mess. So you need that distance. The second thing I am geeking on, the third episode of Rick and Morty for the third season has come out. I've loved Rick and Morty in the past. This season tops them. The Pickle Rick episode may be one of the most brilliant episodes of comedy of any TV series.
Okay. I'm seeing that kind of being memed.
Yes.
And I don't know what it means because I've only watched the first season.
Rick turns himself into a pickle.
Okay.
In order to get out of going to family therapy.
Okay.
And it goes from there. And it's one that I had to watch twice because there are all the jokes and all the silliness. But there's this really dark subcore underneath in the writing. And if you're a fan of Community, you understand that.
Yes.
That he's always got that. That Dan Harmon always has that. I don't know if you've read any of Dan Harmon's comic work.
I didn't know he did comic work.
Scud the Disposable Assassin and the spinoffs.
I knew that was
Rob Schraub.
Rob Schraub and he were buddies.
And he worked on it with him.
Okay, I didn't know that.
He wrote La Costa Nostra.
Okay.
Which was a spinoff. And he was involved in the plotting and writing of Scud the Disposable Assassin. So, yeah, the new season's just... It's amazing, and it reminds me of why Dan Harmon is probably one of the best comedy sitcom writers out there, because he's not just joke.
No.
He knows how to structure a story, and he also is putting in a lot of dark psychological stuff. I talked in the previous episode, I have completed my run of creepy and eerie hardcovers. I've got them all.
Isn't that a good feeling?
It's an okay feeling because they're not going to republish the entire runs of both magazines. Sales have dropped to the point where Dark Horse is not going to be publishing them anymore. So it's like, you only had 20 more issues of Creepy and 15 more issues of Eerie, you bastards. But I picked up one at random, and it was from 1978, edited by Louise Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Who we now know as Louise Simonson.
Yes.
Who also edited the X-Men during their most expansive period.
Yes.
You've got Roger McKenzie. You've got Jan Strand. You've got Corbin. You've got Don McGregor. You Len Wein. Carmine Infantino art that I like, which is rare. But it's like Carmine Infantino actually gave a shit about these stories, so he really put some effort into them. And... The real early Creepy and Eerie's by Goodwin are amazing. But these are really good, and they're not EC derivative. It's not a twist ending every time. And you know, all the European artists are just... Oh, that Spanish black and white art. There's nothing in comics like it.
So this is an area of comics I know, like, little about. Like, I know the names you're dropping.
Yeah.
But their involvement with these... Creepy and Eerie's that I'm completely ignorant.
Same here. I didn't know much about it until they started reprinting them. I had no idea that Len Wein worked for Creepy and Eerie like before he came to Marvel in DC, after he left Marvel, before he went to DC, Roger McKenzie, after he wrote Daredevil. It's like, where did he go? Oh, he went and worked over there.
Okay.
You know, there are some people who are just known for being a creepy in the early, like Bill Dubay and Richard Margolopoulos. But Don McGregor worked there. Doug Mensch got his start there. So not just this wonderful comics history, but a lot of the foreign artists are people who did not transition to mainstream comics.
Okay.
Some did, like Alex Nino. But Alex Nino on the crappy paper with the coloring over it doesn't work as well as Alex Nino's black and white art in all its glory. And then the last thing I am geeking on is a comic I waited 17 years for.
Oh, I know what this is.
Mage number one.
I read that yesterday.
Matt Wagner is the best person working in comics today when he's doing his own stuff. I like his work on The Shadow and Green Hornet and all the pulp characters he loves so much.
But where he's been. That's right, over at Dynamite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is nothing as good as when he is writing and drawing his own stuff. The fluidity of the art. All of the stuff that was there in the beginning that I liked is still there, but now he's mastered it. He's mastered the storytelling. He's mastered his use of shadow. He's even mastered how the color blends with his art, so that a lot of comic art looks like they slap the color on top of it. His, it looks like it's part of it from the beginning. And
why did he take 17 years to bring this back?
He had to wait till the story was done in his head.
Okay.
Because the character's based on him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the character is the same age as him. So if you read the second series, he's meeting all of these other people. Well, they're all based on comic creators that he knows and spends time with. This one is the end of Kevin Matchstick's story. We've already been told. This is the end of the story. This is where it ends. If you're telling a story where you're using yourself as a character, you really don't want to write the end too soon.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, so, I remember when it came back in the 90s.
Yes.
So I was working at the shop at that time, and what a big deal it was, and then it was just gone.
Yep, 15 issues. Each series is 15 issues.
And now it's back. Yeah, my college roommate loves Matt Wagner. So he was super excited about it. He's a big Mage fan, big fan of Grendel. So.
Mage tattoo here, Grendel tattoo here.
You guys would get along. So, but no, that's, yeah, I read it and I was like, God, I haven't read any Mage since I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about comic books for an hour and a half. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Adam?
Tune in to Panels and Pizza for part two.
Ooh.
Of this crossover.
Wait, we don't have a cliffhanger, do we? Maybe I'll burn Joe's joke book.
I think that would be doing the world a favor.
There we go.
Unless it's a truly tasteless joke book.
No, it's the DC joke book.
Oh, that one. Okay. Yes.
Well, fine. Hit my music.
Done, bitches!